Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, Mama, I'm in fear for my life from the long arm of the law.
Got miles to go before we sleep.
Lawman is putting an end to my running, and I'm so far from my home.
We will not go gently. We're going to unleash hell here in December.
Oh, Mama, I can hear you a-crying. You're so scared and all alone.
Hey, somebody fix this guy's buckle.
So he can play football. I'm coming down from the gallows, and I don't have very long.
Welcome to this installment of What's Hot. This is week three. Hard to believe it's already the third week. And I'll tell you what, for May, the NFL offseason, unbelievable how much news has sprouted up just today. It makes you feel like we're already in the midst of a regular season. It's crazy. But we're happy to have all this content for you. There's actually so much on the docket that we might not get to everything. We got to talk about the PAT rules that the owners voted on, 30-2 vote. We'll get to what the extra point will look like this upcoming season. We'll talk about Super Bowl 50, where that's going to be played, and hopefully where the Steelers' last game of the 2015 season will be. I thought we'd get through an episode without talking about the Flategate, but apparently we're not going to be able to do that. Their owner, Robert Kraft, came out today and talked about what he and the Patriots will do going forward. And talking about what he's going to do in terms of fighting or not fighting Roger Goodell's decision to fine him $1 million, take away two draft picks next year, and also Tom Brady being out four games to start the 2015 season. Also, Le'Veon Bell had an interesting interview with ESPN last week. Talked about the marijuana incident last offseason, the three-game suspension, and also may have inadvertently let us know what the status of his right knee is. He said it was close to 100%, which kind of threw people off because obviously we would hope at this point it's 100%. Big Ben, too, one of the writers on NFL.com, released his top 10 quarterbacks, current quarterbacks, in the NFL. And we'll let you know where Big Ben fell on his list. We also have a special new co-host for tonight's show, Danny Bostic. Danny's somewhat new to BTSC, but not new to the journalism field. She's done a lot of writing, different kinds of writing throughout her career. I've gotten to just get familiar with her work the last couple weeks. She's a fabulous writer and a great addition to BTSC. So, Danny, first and foremost, thank you for being on the show tonight. We might be having some technical difficulties with Danielle's mic, so we'll make sure we'll see if we can get her back on here in a little bit. But she'll be joining us, too, on the show. And for everybody listening at home, too, you can make sure to listen and call in. The phone number to call in is 347-850-8581 to call in. Again, that's 340-850-8581. If you're unable to listen live, you can just go on our iTunes feed and type in the standard is the standard. And once you type that in, you'll just have to go to podcast, click on the podcast tag in iTunes, and then you'll see our show, which is titled What's Hot. So, and again, we'll try to get Danny's mic going. And we're going to talk about the PAT rule. The new PAT rule is, in effect, the owners voted. They had three different options. And one of the options was for the PAT that they leave it the same way, leave it the way it is, two-point conversion start at the two-yard line, one-point conversion, the extra point, we move it to the one. But the first rule that came into play was you leave the two-point conversion the same, stays at the two, or if the kicker, if you just want to try an extra point, you have to have it back at the 15-yard line. So now instead of the 18-yard field goal attempt, so to speak, for the kicker, now you're making it 32, 33 yards. That was option one. Option two would be that kickers still are going to try the extra point from the 15, And we're going to leave the two-point conversion alone. We're going to leave that at the two-yard line. But the defensive team can run back a turnover in for 2 points. You know, if there's an interception, fumble return, whatnot. That was option two. Option three was that you have the extra point again at the 15-yard line, but you move the two-point conversion to the one-yard line, so you're making it a little close. This is actually something that Mike Tomlin was a proponent of a few months ago when we talked about this whole rule change. He said he would like it more if it was back to push up to the one-yard line, the two-point conversion. Steelers were actually, under Tomlin, one of the better two-point conversion squads in the NFL. I believe unofficially they were 8 out of their last 10 since Tomlin became coach in 2007. Offhand, I know they had a two-point conversion. They got in the Super Bowl and the next year against the Broncos in the playoff game to tie the score, headed into overtime. And we were 4-for-4 this year on two-point conversion. So if you're a Steelers fan, you're thinking, hey, that's not a bad idea. But what went down with a vote of 30-2 was the vote that we're going to have the extra point from the 15-yard line. So now kickers are going to have to try a 32-yard field goal attempt, essentially. Two-point conversion will not change. It's going to be at the two-yard line, as it always has. But the defensive team will have a chance to return a turnover into their own end zone for 2 points. So those are some of the rules, rule changes. My opinion, and we're going to try to get Danny Bostic back on here as well. My opinion is, you know, it's okay. For the kickers, you know, they've always been this good pretty much. I mean, I remember Roy Girola missed one extra point in 1978. I think 26 of the 32 teams did miss single extra point this year. I mean, pretty much. I mean, yeah, kickers have gotten better over the years, just like quarterbacks have with throwing the football and things of that nature. But really, overall, it really hasn't changed that much. Extra points have pretty much always been automatic. I don't mind that it's back to the 15-yard line at all. One thing that I was going to do was you can either keep it the same or if you want to go for two by trying a 50-yard attempt, I think that would have been pretty cool. So, you know, if you don't have the greatest offense or greatest red zone offense and you score a touchdown, you know, instead of trying it for two the conventional way, which is from the 2-yard line, hey, if you have a great kicker, then move it back a little further for him. That's the thing. You know, I think if you're going to, I guess, challenge kickers for getting better, then why don't you make it an asset to have a guy that can drill the 50-yard two-point conversion? Like, hey, you know what? If we have a guy that good, like remember the year that Gary Anderson made 37 of his first 37 attempts before he did miss the fateful one in the 98 NFC Championship game? If you have a guy like that back then and you're down by 8 points, geez, just get a touchdown, have him try to kick it. That's what I would have done on the two-point conversion thing at the two-yard line. I see where Tomlin's at, having it at the one. But if you're going to award 2 points, I want a little bit more of a challenge, and I think the two-point conversion is a little bit more of a challenge, plus it leaves more of the element of doubt that you could throw the football. I think if it's at the one, you know, unless you have a pretty anemic running game, I don't see why you would not just run the football. I mean, you're a yard away. Can you imagine if we would have had Jerome Bettis back then? You know, you have two-point conversions at the one. Oh, my God, we would have just plugged him in all day. Or if we would have the Steelers O-line in the 70s with Franco and Rocky on the trap play. Or again, we're going back to the 90s. Cordell Stewart was just amazing at third and one, fourth and one situations. He would just jump over the top. So, you know, those are all things that you got to think about. And the other thing, too, is if we're really worried about the safety of the NFL and the NFL players, and you're trying to eliminate, you know, plays where there's going to be high contact, you know, I feel like if you move the two-point conversion from the two to the one, you're kind of welcoming more chances for players to get hurt. So that could be another thing. Because the thing is that's one of the reasons why they pushed the kickoff from the 30 to the 35-yard line, because they didn't want all those big, you know, bang-bang hits from, you know, the special teamers from the offense and the defensive side of it. So I think if you incorporate two-point conversions at the one-yard line, now all of a sudden it's like, okay, well, it seems like the NFL's contradicting themselves if you're saying, hey, you know, we're trying to eliminate, you know, plays where there's high contact and guys get injured. So that could be a reason. However, you know, I don't think the NFL, one of their big worries is contradicting themselves. You know, they have quite often. I mean, Roger Goodell, you know, always talks about player safety, which, you know, I'm sure the guy's not a devil kind of guy. I mean, I don't think he's not a malicious person. I do believe he does care about player safety, but then don't talk about how you want to have an 18-game season. And don't talk about these Thursday night games when you're having guys only have 3 days off. And that's just, you know, a conversation for a different day. We've got more to get to on this show. What's hot week three? And I don't know if Danny's been able to be able to get technical difficulty. I don't know if she's joined us right now.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you. Awesome, awesome.
Awesome. Well, sounds like I'm on, Danny, yeah.
Right, and again, too, we had you on in very short notice, so thank you for joining us. Chris Carter, he got kind of logged up with work, so Danny was good enough to join us. And I don't know if you have anything to chime in with the PAT, as you know that you know they're changing it now. You'll never see again extra points coming from the 1 yard line. What are your thoughts on?
I guess I'm kind of with you to some extent. I don't understand the difference. It's just not a drastic change. Most kickers can make a 33-yard attempt. So I'm not quite sure what they're getting at. I think it'll have a greater impact on games and inclement weather. So it'd be interesting to kind of see which venues and which games could be having an impact on those attempts, you know, when the weather's bad, because 33 yards just usually isn't that big of a deal. I don't know what they were going for, if they were just trying to add some drama to the game. I mean, it's pretty much a given that extra point's going to go through. It's very rare that it doesn't, and I think that'll be the case on the 33-yard try as well. Maybe it'll add a little extra anxiety, but I'm not a huge fan. I'm not quite sure what they were going for with that.
Yeah, and I'm kind of with you, and I'm actually surprised that they didn't meddle at all with moving the two-point conversion from the two to the one. I really thought they were going to do that. But again, you know, to me it's like that just seems too easy. You know, to award 2 points to move the ball 3 feet, it just seems to me like that's a little too easy. You know, let's keep it somewhat challenging. These guys are professionals. They pay millions. So I do like the fact that the NFL didn't move the two-point conversion any closer.
I like it at the 2 yard line, but I don't like that they can return, that the defense can return the interception or fumble for 2 points, because I would like to see more 2 point conversions, not fewer. And I think that would be a big deterrent, because I don't think any team's going to say, oh, 33 yards, that's really hard, let's go for 2 points. Especially if that 2 point conversion could result in 2 points for the opposing team.
Right, I agree. Actually, I remember when I was in college, OSU was playing, I think it was Navy. Navy tied the score, or they were going to tie the score, but they decided to go for the win. And now in the college football, that's been around for a while, where you can return turnover for points. And OSU did that in that game. They had a pick six. They ran all the way back, and it was pretty exciting. We had a lot of random fans, casual fans that I've been around, Danny, I don't know if you would agree or you've had this experience. Most of them didn't know that it was a dead ball. They just thought that it was just assumed that players turned back. You really don't see a lot of turnovers on 2 point conversions. But, you know, I don't know if you heard me. One of my ideas was, you know, if kickers have gotten so much better at their jobs, why don't you offer a 2 point conversion for kickers? Like, you know, if we have a great kicker like Vinatieri back in his day, and even for the Steelers, Norm Johnson was pretty good in the 90s. You know, he kicked a lot. Again, a 47-yard field goal attempt or something of that nature, Super Bowl 30, which we might get to later on the show talking about the 95 Steelers. I thought it might not be a bad idea. Hey, you know, if you've got a great kicker and you want to try a 2 point conversion, and if kickers are getting this much better, why don't you try, you know, see if they can kick a 50-yard for 2 points. But I think the issue you might get in there is that might be an advantage only for the teams that play indoors, and you might have outdoor teams arguing that, hey, the indoor team's getting more of an advantage, but I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think at that point, kickers would be demanding more money, and I just wonder how many teams would want to invest in their kickers. I mean, there's not a lot of talk about really paying the kicker. So I think at the point where they could be a bigger asset to the team from a potential 2 point conversion on a longer kick, then, and that would just, I mean, where are you going to put your money? Are you going to put it in one of your running backs, wide receivers, or your kicker? That sentence just seems a little odd. I think that would take a bit of adjustment to look at them as bigger contributors than they are right now.
Right, and actually, I wrote an article about this earlier in the week, and I had a poll kind of saying, like, giving the three options that the NFL owners voted on, and then I kind of asked people to chime in about, like, you know, what do you think we should do? And 40% of the people, which was the number one vote, said don't change anything. And you know, when I watch the 70s highlights on radio, the 70s Steelers, and speaking of that, NFL Network's actually doing their dynasty week because it's the off season and they need substance for their network for 24-hour football channel. The Steelers are the first dynasty you're talking about, which is kind of cool. So they're going to be showing a lot of these Super Bowls that we've talked about on this show and other shows on television. It already looks different. You know, the hitting, just you know, the balance of running and passing. You know, back then it was a much more run-heavy league because of the rules changes and whatnot. Does it bother you a little bit, Danny, that you know, one day, you know, we're going to watch football with our kids when they get older or whatnot, and we're going to show them old highlights of the 05 Steelers or 75 Steelers, and the game won't look the same. Does that bother you at all, or are you more like you know, this is, you know, whatever?
Yeah, I mean, well, especially with head injuries now, I'm thinking maybe things will regress and it'll start looking a little bit more gentle just because of the TBI issue and, you know, concerns about brain injury and correlations with suicide. So I have thought about that the game would look different, but I'm wondering if it'll just look, you know, more in the direction of flag football than anything else.
Right. And, you know, and there is a fine line the NFL has to work on. Because, yeah, you know, when I watched the game in the 70s, Wendell Tyler in Super Bowl 14, the Rams running back, left the game 6 times. At some point, and I think was some of it was head stuff or whatnot, and I think some of it was cramps, but still, it's kind of like, you know, at some point you just take the guy out and say, dude, you know, you could give it a go 6 times. But so I agree with you. You know, it already does look different from the physicality standpoint, but at the same time, too, you don't want it to become flag football. So. And that's why it's weird because they were showing Bradshaw's stats on NFL Network recently and Roethlisberger's, and not taking anything away from Big Ben, but his stats are just going to look better than Bradshaw's because the rules are different now. They're much more in favor of the offense and much more in favor of having teams pass the ball because of the contact that the cornerbacks can't have and with the stretching out of the hash marks in the late 70s. I mean, Bradshaw's career was about half over when more of these passing rules that are still in effect today came into play. And with that, and this wasn't on our docket, the only thing to talk about, but I'd be remiss if I didn't mention the unfortunate passing of Adrian Robinson. And you wrote a really good piece about it last night, about his passing. I don't know if you just had anything to add on to that. And really, I guess your article, when I read it, it kind of opened up to me and reminded me that you know what, there are more important things than football. And yeah, we love the rough, tough hitting of the 70s Steelers and just the physicality of football, but we have to remember that, you know, we have to think about these guys as safety and their overall long-term health and well-being.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's definitely a mental health issue as well. I mean, when you throw young guys into the league, such a competitive level of play, it's very high stakes, potential lifestyle change for them in terms of income. And that's a lot. That's a lot of pressure. And I think oftentimes, you know, there's just a lot of brokenness hiding behind these very strong facades. So it's just a good reminder when we think about, you know, our football players and, you know, friends and family in general, that things aren't always what they seem. Somebody can seem pretty strong and invincible and be waging a pretty difficult battle inside. And with the way mental illness is stigmatized, you know, it's hard for people to step forward and say, hey, I need help. I'm mentally ill and I need help. Oftentimes, you know, things can kind of spiral and end up with some pretty sad outcomes.
Yeah, and really, if you've ever read Gary Pomerantz's book, Their Life's Work, it came out about the Steelers dynasty about a year and a half ago, and he mentions that with Mike Webster. It's just kind of a really sad story about how his life ended. So, you know, it's tough because, you know, and I don't even remember playing football in middle school. That's not as far as my football career could go based on my talent and size. You know, it was a normal thing to just to bang heads with your teammates with you know, in helmets, you know, before games. And that was kind of a thing you did to psych yourself up. And I think teams really aren't doing that as much anymore at every level. And I think that's good because it's being macho and then it's being smart. And you could be a tough guy but not do all those quote-unquote macho things like, you know, practice without your chin strap fully buckled on. That was another issue, you know, growing up now. I mean, and you see it in the NFL now. You see it a little bit more back in the 90s. But, you know, players are being a little bit more smart themselves and understanding that, hey, you know, you can be a tough guy but still want to make sure you're safe. You know, I think for a long time that wasn't emphasized. But that's the new PAT rule, and that's what it's going to look like going forward. And it'll be interesting to see what that does in terms of changing the game. You know, we know that the Eagles, Chip Kelly, is a rare bird, no pun intended, and with the players he's released, the players he's acquired, and just his thoughts on going for two and the offense he runs, that'll be interesting to see how that changes. And even our offense, as I mentioned earlier, we have one of the better two-point conversion teams under Mike Tomlin dating back to 07. Other thing shortly to touch on before we get to the Patriots, Danielle, I know you've been all over the Deflategate. I think you've been the most in-depth and actually, you know, humorous writer about the Deflategate. So I can't wait to hear your opinion on that. So we won't spend much time talking about our next topic, but Super Bowl 50 was just announced. It'll be in San Francisco, which I think is cool because it's going to be in kind of the Golden State and the golden anniversary of the Super Bowl, and actually the logo of Super Bowl 50, which I think has gotten kind of lame since Super Bowl 45. They just kind of have the generic silver letters with the background of the city it's going to be in, but they're actually not going to have the Roman numeral numbers anymore. It's just going to be 50, because if it was Roman numeral, it would be an L, which looks kind of weird. But any thoughts on it being in California? I mean, I think it's kind of cool, especially from the standpoint that Super Bowl I was played in California, so you're kind of going full circle here.
Yeah, it's definitely going full circle. As a former Latin teacher, I am distressed they're breaking away from the Roman numerals, but I think, you know, I prefer an outdoor venue with, you know, kind of warmer weather. I think the snowbound Super Bowl is not something I'm comfortable with yet. So I think that's a great venue overall. I have no complaints about that, and I'll be looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too. I think it'll be cool too. Plus, it looks like a great stadium. And you know, I don't know if you've ever been to Super Bowl. I have not. I had a chance at Super Bowl 36. Well, my dad did, but after we lost to New England in the 0-1 title game, he said that I can't stomach going. Which that was the great Super Bowl with Vinatieri's field goal. So in hindsight, kind of wish we would have went. But do you have any interest in ever getting to the Super Bowl if you haven't already? And is that on your bucket list, or is that something you just assume to watch at home and avoid the hustle bustle and spending all that money?
I think the seats on my sofa are the best, but you know, California is obviously enticing, and since they're not going to be playing in a baseball stadium, I mean, obviously that'll be a new beautiful facility. So it does have a lot of things going for it, and in terms of a travel destination, I mean, there's just you know, it just seems like a win-win for everybody involved.
Right. Yeah, I agree with you. And I'll tell you what, you know, I'm not Latin. I don't have any Latin background at all. You know, but I always loved the Roman numeral thing. It just made the Super Bowl just seem bigger than life. You know, just the numbers, and when you would look up Super Bowls in the past before you were alive, it made it seem bigger. And that's the only reason why, actually, when I was a kid, I would help my friends that did Latin. And I would be like, any Roman numeral up to 32 I can help you with, but that's how many Super Bowls there were at that point. But, like, I remember, like, Super Bowl 30 when there was the three X's. I just thought that was, like, the coolest thing in the world that, you know, and I don't know. Yeah, I agree with you. So hopefully after that, after this Super Bowl, we'll go back to the Latin Roman numerals. And now, you know, without further ado, let's get to the Patriots thing. And I wrote in the preview for this show on the BTSC that it looks like we're gonna go an episode without talking about the Deflategate, but it lives to see another show. But I'm glad that it did today because I have you on the show, and I
love the Deflategate.
I know you do. Yeah, I know. I can't wait. What are your thoughts on this? Robert Kraft came out pretty much and said, "Hey, you know what? We're not gonna pursue this anymore. You know, we're pretty much just gonna accept our punishment, even though we don't agree with it. We're just gonna accept it and just kind of move on."
I mean, you know, if he hadn't done all that whining before this decision, he might have come out, you know, looking okay. Like, okay, this is the fine. We're not gonna put up a fight. But his initial response was completely just appalling, coming from someone of his stature, both on his for his team and the NFL at large. So I don't really think he salvaged much. I don't think he had a case if he had appealed, and I really feel like this was the only decision he could have made. Certainly doesn't change my opinion of the team or the scandal. You know, and he's saying, hey, you know, he wants to spare the team, he wants to spare the back and forth. I have to think at some point he realized that he's embarrassed himself, and, you know, it's pretty much in his self-interest to just stop it.
What do you know what? Like, it's tough with Robert Kraft because you can't argue with the success he's had as an owner. He took over in 94. He inherited Bill Parcells, who got him the Super Bowl 31. He's only hired two head coaches, Pete Carroll and Belichick, who's still there. What are your thoughts on him as an owner?
Oh, I mean, just to be blunt, I can't stand him. I don't like his organization. I think, you know, the way he's just his organization's just, it speaks for itself. I mean, he's kind of at the head of it, and I don't think he's a good owner. It's kind of like the Redskins on another level. I mean, the Patriots are kind of the moral version of the Redskins. Dan Snyder is a terrible owner. His team sucks year after year. So it's hard to look at the organization and look at the flaws within an organization and say that the owner's great. I mean, the Patriots might win, but they're a morally corrupt team. And, you know, I do kind of admire the win-at-all-costs attitude, but just in taking it too far, that just doesn't reflect well on Robert Kraft.
No, I agree with you. You know, it's crazy because there are so many controversial owners. I felt like when I was growing up, like, you didn't know who any owner was. I knew who the Rooneys were. And, like, you know, even back then, Jerry Jones was – he's probably more of a celebrity owner back then than he is now. He did this terrible Papa John's commercials. But, like, it makes you think, like, you know almost every owner now on the team. You know, like, Davis, the younger Davis, actually – during the owners' meetings, actually, there were a lot of Raider fans protesting because there's the rumors that they might go to Los Angeles for the second time. So he had to kind of go out there and try to smolder the fires and pretty much say, hey, if I get some funding for the stadium, we're going to stay, but we got to at least look at other options. But, with Kraft and the Patriots in general, you know, I always thought that they thought of themselves as elitist, even before the Belichick era. You know, I just remember in the 90s when we would play them, that would be the game. I just wanted us to win so bad. In 97, when we beat them twice, including, you know, we were down 21-13 late at their house. They were defending AFC champs, and we stunned them in the fourth quarter and won overtime. That still ranks up there as one of my favorite ever wins as a Steelers fan because they just always had that aura of elitism. And obviously, I don't think it's all because of Kraft, but I think it certainly starts at the top. And it was hilarious when this decision came down on NFL Network. They asked LaDainian Tomlinson his thoughts. And you know, on his background, he hates New England because they danced on the field and they beat his Chargers back in 06. And you could tell he had, like, a little, like, wry smile on his face. He couldn't let it all go because he's trying to be professional. But I just loved it. It was great.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you're right about the elitism. I think they think they're above the law. Like, just say, hey, they can do what they want. I mean, and certainly most of the time they are operating within the rules. But their overall attitude and just their vibe they give off is fairly unpleasant. And I don't think, you know, he's trying to frame this decision. Just kind of like, oh, look, I don't want to put the league through this. I don't want to put my team through this. But, I mean, he's a businessman. He's out for himself.
Yeah, and again, you know, I don't want to get too far off topic here. But honestly, NFL hell to me, or like if I have to spend time in hell or purgatory or whatever, it's going to be sitting on a couch handcuffed and watching the Patriots play in the playoffs. And I have to listen to Jim Nance pretty much write a poetry letter to Tom Brady for the entire game. It's just like, those 4 o'clock games, and I'm like, oh, who's going to be playing? And it's New England, and Jim Nance just pretty much just in love with Tom Brady, and I have to hear about all that. It makes me sick. And, you know, it's one of those things where with Belichick, you know, he's won some 4 Super Bowls, he's tied Knoll, which stinks, you know, but at the same time, I mean, I think Knoll's legacy speaks for itself. You know, what that team did speaks for itself. I don't think what Belichick was able to match devalues at all what the Steelers are able to do. I think what the Steelers did back then still speaks for itself today.
Yeah, I have to agree, Brian. I mean, you know, it's just I can't imagine this happening or being handled this way by any other organization. It's one thing that it happened, but their response, I think, just really revealed their true colors in terms of their attitude about other teams, the attitude about the fan base outside of their own fan base. I mean, you know, they're part of the NFL. There are a lot of NFL fans out there. And I felt like his response was insulting and arrogant. It certainly didn't do him any favors in my eyes.
Right. No, I agree. And you know what? This just makes this makes week one even greater, because you know what? Like, the funny thing is, you know, a lot of people don't like the Steelers, because, I mean, I live in Columbus, Ohio. You know, there's a lot of Browns and Bengals fans that have been battered by us for years, so we're pretty hated in this part of the country, even though there are a lot of Steelers, you know, Pittsburgh transplant people here. So I'm not totally alone out here, but it's funny because it's like, there's only a few teams that the Steelers play, and we're not the most hated team on the field. And when we play sometimes the Cowboys and the Patriots, especially, like, we're actually the team people pull for, which I think is kind of funny.
Yeah, so, absolutely. Yeah, it's kind of the lesser of different evils.
Right, exactly. Kind of moving on, you know, we've addressed the PAT thing. If you're just joining us here on WhatsApp, and kind of would like to just kind of reprise those that might just be listening in now, I'm Brian Diardo. You can call in at 347-850-8581. That's 347-850-8581. We've talked about the PAT, Super Bowl 50, and the New England Patriots. We've got Daniel Bosick from BCSC as well joining us today. And it's been a lot of fun working with her so far. We are hitting now the bottom of the hour. And we want to talk now about Le'Veon Bell. It was last week on ESPN. I can't remember who he was interviewed by. It was Justine Anderson, that's right. They touched on a lot of things, and one thing they talked about was marijuana, which Le'Veon Bell said he's going to steer clear from the rest of his career, because he said he doesn't want anything to destruct what he's trying to do as a football player. So I respect him for that. He didn't say he was going to quit forever, but you know what? After his career's over, it might be illegal by then. I have no idea, but at least he said it for the time being. He's not going to smoke it. And he also inadvertently talked about his knee. He said, near the end of a quote, he said, "I'm glad everything worked out, and I'm glad my knee is getting close to 100% again," unquote. Now, is that me overanalyzing, Danny, or is that a legitimate worry that his knee might not be back to 100%?
Well, you know, I was kind of surprised this was actually a story, because I had assumed his knee was not at 100% at this point. I mean, that was a significant injury, and part of the point of the off season is to recover and rehabilitate. So I was even thinking that his suspension at the beginning of the season would give his knee even more time to recover, so that he's not risking a secondary injury down the line because of an incomplete recovery.
Right, that's true. You know, and he's one of those guys, he loves Twitter, and he's actually been criticized about it a little bit in the past, and he actually had a couple tweets saying, you know, "I'm going to keep doing this, I'm a happy guy, just kind of let me live." And he does a lot of, like, videos of him with his shirt off, doing workouts and showing cuts and things, so, and actually, you know, I was reading my comments on that story. I wrote about that ESPN story, and one of the comments was, you know, his knee might be back to 100%, but he might not have the strength in it yet and have that full confidence, which I think it's more of that. I think, you know, as of now, the Steelers said back then, if he had to play, if we would have advanced and beaten Baltimore, he would have played. So
absolutely,
it's one of those things, I don't think they misdiagnosed the injury at all. I just think, like you said, there's a difference between it being still bruised and sore as opposed to it's back. It just might not be as strong as he wants it to be.
Yeah, I just think you can't give those injuries, you know, enough time to heal. Obviously, in the NFL, you know, you got to get the players back out onto the field. But I wasn't scandalized by him letting that slip. I mean, of course, the party line is probably, "I'm feeling great, I'm at 110%. I'm not sure he was supposed to say that. But in my mind, you know, the injuries aren't anything, you know, to mess around with. And he obviously is one of the Steelers' best assets. So it's in everyone's best interest, in terms of fans and the team, that his knee is at 100% when he gets back onto the field. Because it might be close to 100% and able to play at the same level as last year, but he might be more vulnerable to re-injuring that knee if he does not give it enough time to heal and doesn't build that strength back up. So while, you know, I'm sure, you know, the Steelers want to present this facade of everybody's at 110%, 120%, we're ready to go. I do think there was probably a grain of truth in that. It's probably not at 100% yet.
Right. You know what? I'm not going to hate on the guy for being straight up honest about it. And again, it doesn't need to be 100% right now. Like you said, I mean, that was a hyperflex right knee. I mean, it's kind of me. You know, I know you have a swimming background. I'm a runner. And before I had shin splints for the first time, I always heard, man, you know, I always thought it was a soft injury until I got shin splints, and then it pretty much, I was rendered useless in terms of running, and I had to go to the bike for a while. So, you know,
yeah.
You hyperflex knee, you think it's not that bad? No, that would hurt, I would imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I think part of the issue there, just tying it back into the marijuana use, is just he's a young guy. And, you know, a lot of maturity can happen just developmentally at that age for everybody, not just NFL players. So, you know, he slips up a little bit during an interview. He still has a lot to learn, and hopefully he'll have a really long career ahead of him where he can just become more polished and, you know, just kind of grow into his stature.
Right, and I really hope that because I read some of the comments, and one of the comments was, oh, God, another guy is going to have a short career. I wouldn't go that far. I think it's way too early to think that he's going to have one injury. I don't know. For me, I'm kind of jaded because I always hope that, you know, anytime I see a running back get hurt, I go back to Willie Parker, and he broke his leg in 2007. Oh, my God, and 05, 06, especially 07, he had a couple 200-yard games and was really cranking it, and that is, he never really overcame that injury. So that always kind of makes me worry when I see running backs on the ground, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, I think he could have a very long career, but I also think, that comment you were referring to on one of your posts, I mean, it does kind of underscore the need for more depth at running back, because if he's going to be taking all those snaps and literally, you know, the entire team is resting on his shoulders in terms of we need you out there, or we can't win, then I do think that could shorten his career, because it would, you know, make him more prone to injuries. It would make it more likely that he would be playing through injuries, that he should rest. So I'm really hoping some talent will pop up behind Bell just to give him a little bit of relief, not just as a backup plan, what if Bell gets hurt, but just to provide him a situation where he can have the longest career possible.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And when you think about, you know, in all honesty, you know, I don't think it's the core, you know, it's a coincidence that Peyton Manning going to Super Bowl I was in the rain in the Super Bowl, one of the only Super Bowls that's ever rained, and he had to hand the ball off to Joseph Addai and Dominique Rowe a lot. And, you know, you look at Big Ben's first Super Bowl that we won, he had Deuce Staley, Jerome Bettis, Ron Haynes, and Willie Parker all on the running back depth list. I mean, it's no coincidence a lot of the Super Bowls we won, we had a nice, you know, stable of running back. And so D'Angelo Williams is going to be the guy, you know, the first 3 weeks. You know, New England's not going to have Tom Brady for week one. We're not going to have Le'Veon Bell. I would say, though, and no knock on Le'Veon, I would say their loss, you know, them not having Brady is a lot worse than us not having Le'Veon. And, you know, D'Angelo had his fill of injuries last year. He's 32 years old, but I don't think he's ready to go back to the stable yet. I think he's a good running back, and he has the same cutback style that Le'Veon has, so I feel confident with him. What do you think, Danny? Do you feel, you know, at least okay that D'Angelo is going to do the job the first 3 weeks?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think that was a good move. He has experience. He has poise. He's not going to freak out, oh, my goodness, what's going on. I mean, he's been around for a while. He does not need to be, or he will not be, our next running back for the next 10 years. He needs to get through those three games. And I think in terms of mentorship, honestly, hadn't read up that much about him, but I was really impressed with his selflessness, his character, his team attitude, and I think that will be awesome for Bell, and it's clear that he has a ways to go in terms of maturity and character development, and to have another running back who's been there and has made it through while maintaining, you know, some sense of dignity and character and self-respect and commitment to his teams, I think that's fantastic on that end, too.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, and I don't think Bell's going to have the 80-odd catches he had last year. I don't think so. I think one of the reasons why was it was a necessity. It wasn't a luxury that Ben had to throw to him, I think, because if you remember early last year, I mean, we had Antonio Brown getting his 5-plus catches a game, but after that it was like, who do we have? Because Martavis Bryant, the guy that's caught 8 touchdowns, you know, he wasn't that effective the first 2 weeks because he was a rookie, you know, and he wasn't getting a lot of opportunities. So that's more than understood that he wasn't the man that he became later on in the year. So, you know, we had Antonio Brown, and Marcus Wheaton was kind of adapting to that role now as number two, but I think the verdict's still out whether he'll be a two or number three. And then we had Lance Moore and Darius Hayward-Bay struggling with injuries. So that kind of left Heath Miller and Le'Veon as the only guys that catch the ball. So I think people that are worried that Le'Veon's going to wear down, I don't think you're going to have to worry because I think He will always be a threat catching the ball, but I don't think you'll ever see him in the 80 catch range again.
Yeah, I agree with your assessment there. I mean, I you know, anything can happen. I mean, there's fluke injuries, there's freak injuries, there's unforeseen character issues that come up. Players have car accidents, and I'm knocking on wood right now. I'm not jinxing anything, but you know, it's just hard to predict. But I think the Steelers are generally pretty smart about player development, and you know, they're looking for the long haul. Want the players around a long time, and I think they gear, you know, insofar as they can, I think they gear the players' development for a long career, not an awesome 2 years and then you're gone. So I don't see why that would be different with Bell, and he certainly bounced back from his first injury. He's been injured before and, you know, was able to come back from it without that, as far as I know, being a problem for him once he recovered. So it seems like he's young, he's strong. He's developing a greater sense of maturity and character.
Right.
So I hope he'll be around for a long time.
Yeah, me too. And, you know, about the Steelers receivers, they also kind of said that, you know, I think it was Jeff, our editor at Behind the Steel Curtain, wrote a story saying that one of the esteemed members of the media did not have us in the top five receiving corps in the NFL, which, right now, I would agree. You know, we're not yet. I mean, there's a lot of promise. Sammy Coates is promise. Marcus Wheaton, I don't think we've seen his best football. He's only 24 years old, and this is going to be his third season. Martavis Bryant, you know, he had an excellent rookie season, but I wouldn't call him one of the elite receivers yet. So, well, obviously, AB speaks for himself, but no, I would agree. We're not top five yet, but I think we certainly have the capability of being that, especially also with Le'Veon Bell. But moving along here on what's hot, Danny Bostic and Brian Giardo here. Again, if you want to listen to this show after the broadcast, just go on iTunes and write "The Standard is the Standard" and click on podcast, and you'll see the show titled "What's Hot." Big Ben Roethlisberger. A lot of times, as you know, Danny, and Steelers fans out there, he doesn't normally get a lot of love. You know, whenever there's talk about the best quarterbacks in the NFL, he's normally not in your top five. Maybe our top five, but not, you know, the analysts of ESPN, NFL Network, and so on. But Elliot Harrison, NFL media analyst for NFL.com, which is, you know, in liaison with NFL Network, had Ben as the number three quarterback among current quarterbacks in the NFL. The only two above him was Aaron Rodgers, who you know, beat us in Super Bowl 45 and had a great game and a great season that year and was the MVP of the 2011 regular season. Tom Brady, obviously, number two. Right after Big Ben, Breeze at number four, Tony Romo at five, Andrew Luck at six, Russell Wilson at seven, Peyton Manning at eight, Phillip Rivers at nine, Alex Smith at 10, which is really surprising because you still got Joe Flacco out there, who I know – a lot of Steelers fans aren't high on, but the guy is a Super Bowl MVP, so it's kind of hard to argue. And then Eli Manning, who I get has been incredibly inconsistent in his career, but still has two Super Bowl rings, and both came in Super Bowl wins against New England. But I kind of wanted your assessment on number three, and where would you put him, and do you think that Big Ben is deserving of his number three ranking?
Oh, absolutely, and it's about time. I mean, he was underrated, not among Steelers fans, but it is nice to see him getting some recognition for his ability. I mean, I think there was a bit of an adjustment curve with him and the Todd Haley offense, and I know that that's a pretty controversial topic, but I think, you know, him having a buy-in, you know, accepting that, okay, this is my new offensive coordinator, this might actually work. I mean, I saw a huge shift in him just in terms of the ability to kind of execute what Todd Haley had in mind and execute it with enthusiasm instead of, you know, probably thinking about Arians every play. So, you know, he definitely has a talent. He has a size. He's smart. And I think Haley is actually turning out to be a great fit for him. So I have to say I was pleased to see him at number three. And, you know, hopefully this next season it'll be even higher.
And, yeah, you bring up a good point. We need to give Todd Haley more love because, and I agree, you know, when you lose, you know, the offensive coordinator that we had, obviously goes ahead and goes to Arizona and is doing a great job. And Big Ben said he was like a father to him, Bruce Arians, you know. But there's obviously going to be an adjustment, just like any position, you know, any job. You get a new supervisor, there's going to be that give and take and that maturation process. But Todd Haley, you know, they brought him in because, you know, Dan Rooney was getting tired of watching Ben take all those hits. I mean, he got sacked mm-hmm. 50 times in 2008. And, yeah, a lot of
yeah.
that is Ben holds the ball. He holds the ball, and he'll be the first to admit it. But he was getting hit way too much, bottom line. And Dan wanted the culture of the offense to change. He wanted it to be more quick passing. And look at the quarterback it's made, Ben. And I even think it's a shame that it took 2 6-touchdown games in a row to get the media to finally give Ben respect, because he's never just been about stats. And, well, yeah, I'm glad that got the media's attention. Like I said, it's sad because I thought in 2012 and 13, Ben had great seasons, just the team around him wasn't that good. It wasn't as good as 2011 and 10 and 09 because, you know, the defense was in a transition and so was the offensive line. So, and we didn't have Le'Veon Bell at the time, but I'm glad Ben's getting his just due. And like you said, I mean, the offense now is about quick passing, and a lot of that is, you know, kudos to Todd Haley for implementing this game plan, and Big Ben for being a professional, being an adult, and growing through this with Todd.
Yeah, I mean, I was obviously had a close relationship with Arians, and I think he had a rough adjustment to Haley. But the other coach I think we need to keep in mind is Munchak, because offensive line with pretty much the same personnel, I mean, it was night and day difference. I mean, it's not like, you know, Ben could pull out a lounge chair and sit there and read the whole playbook, but he had way more time in the pocket. And I think that was one of the most significant changes over previous years. And I have just been thrilled with Munchak, and I mean, that's obviously helped our run game. But I think he's been one of the biggest difference makers this last year. So I don't think we can underestimate his contribution either.
Yeah, and you know, you hit the nail on the head. Our offensive line, I could argue, is the strength of our team right now with Beecham and David DeCastro and Pounce. I mean, I think DeCastro's a star. I'd be stunned this year if he doesn't make the Pro Bowl. I mean, when you look at that Cincinnati game in Cincinnati that we won earlier in the season, not the last game of the year, the 27-17 victory, it was pretty much just continuous steady dose of Le'Veon on the left side of the offensive line, the right side of Bengals defense, and it was DeCastro and it was Heath Miller on the pullout of that counter run, and they were just dismantling that right side of the Bengals defense. I mean, DeCastro is a beast, and you know, I think this is his third year in the league. I think he is the Alan Faneca of this group. And I love the fact that we can say that we didn't have to draft any offensive linemen. I mean, obviously you want to have depth, but, you know, we've had some misses in terms of picking offensive linemen. I know Jermaine Stephens in the 90s, people still lament over that draft pick. So we haven't always hit bullseyes in the past, but I love the offensive line we have now. And I think, you know, it's not a coincidence that AB and Le'Veon and Big Ben are having seasons they're having, because as you said, Danny, a lot of times you forget to give props to the offensive line.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I remember watching that pocket collapse time and time again, and it was so frustrating. And, you know, just previous draft years, just hoping they'd find someone, just find the talent for the O-line. And, you know, it turned out it wasn't all a talent issue. I mean, it was an issue of coaching. So when Munchak came over, I was thrilled. And, you know, he didn't disappoint at all. So I think Ben finally has the tools to really excel. You know, he has the offensive line. If he wants to run the ball, there's Bell. He's got some talent in terms of wide receivers, and he himself is a huge talent. So, you know, hopefully we'll just be looking at even more improvement this upcoming year. And I completely agree with you about DeCastro. I'm less than thrilled, you know, with Adams and Foster. There are some weak links on the line, but I think Munchak has done an amazing job with the talent he has.
Right. And you know, I love Munchak. Yeah, and I remember as soon as we got him, you know, I was thinking, man, like, you know, a lot of times you forget about who your coaches are and who the personnel is. I mean, this guy was the head coach, so obviously he's got a high coaching pedigree, and he's got a strong resume, and he was a great player, you know, when he was a
absolutely, yeah.
You know, and you know, I think with Ben, I think the one knock on Ben, besides the fact that he's not your Tom Brady, your golden boy, pocket passer, Johnny U kind of guy. One thing I like about him now, and why he, you know, I would take him over, I even said this a few years ago, I would take him over Peyton Manning any day of the week and twice on Sunday, because I think Ben has a better grasp over his limitations and what the team needs. And I think with Manning, you know, he just, if a game's ever getting away from him, including the playoffs, he just goes to the well and just starts putting too much on his shoulders, and he totally abandons his running game. And I think that's a big reason why he only has one Super Bowl. And I think with Ben, and the only knock I'm going to say on Ben is, and it's not really him, it's just, you know, I don't know, it just seems like he'll never be known as one of the greatest ever until, you know, he doesn't have those New Orleans Saints games from this past year, New York Jets games from this past year where the offense just lays an egg, and even against Cleveland mm-hmm. earlier this year. And it's absolutely not all on him, absolutely not. But you can't have those games. Because I think a lot of times those games, it comes down to the quarterback just willing a key player, willing a momentum-changing play that just turns the momentum of the game in the other team's favor. And it just, time and time again, I get everybody in the NFL, every team's a professional, but it kills me to see us have these impressive games against the Colts, where we storm for 6 touchdowns, and then we play the Jets, and it's like we've never even seen, you know, we have no chemistry at all on offense.
Yeah, you know, that was one of the reasons, you know, initially when Bell was suspended, or when, you know, it turned out the Steelers have the toughest schedule of the year. The Steelers tend to do really well when there's a significant challenge. Somehow they struggle against weaker teams, and I don't know if it's mental or if their game preparation is different, but I feel more confident about the Steelers when they're playing a really tough opponent. So, yeah, but you're right. I mean, it's baffling sometimes having that great momentum and then losing an easy game. But one thing I do tend to worry about a little bit with Roethlisberger is injuries, because he does still tend to hold on to that ball a little bit too long. I mean, his drive and his determination to make a play sometimes trumps better judgment. And he took a couple hits, you know, just in the past couple years where it just makes me so nervous. But I think with the offensive line functioning better, I think with Todd Haley's play calling, you know, he definitely has many years ahead of him.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. You know, and with Big Ben, I think as he's gotten older, I think he's more cognizant of the hits he's taking. I think any of us in our early 20s, you know, especially people that were athletes, you know, it's kind of like, you know, whatever, I'll work out, I'll do all this, I'll do all that. And you always hear people saying, oh, you know, you got to be careful about your knees and this and that. And maybe for Ben taking all those hits, he's like, whatever, I can bounce back from it, I'm good. And he's always been a tough guy. I mean, you know, he had that motorcycle accident, and then he didn't even miss a game. And I remember, that's the 06 season. I remember later in that season, Terrell Suggs, I think, sent him into another planet, and he finished the game and finished that season. I mean, it's just, he's a tough guy. But again, that being said, I think he's gotten smarter as he's gotten older. I think he's 33 now. So I think as he's gotten older, he understands now, hey, you know, I got to pick and choose. And you see it now. He doesn't always take on, during runs, he doesn't always take on linebackers head on. He'll fly. And I think, honestly, that might help him more in terms of motivating the guys. Because, if you're in a tight game and you're playing the Ravens and you see Ben not sliding, taking on hits and picking and choosing, then all of a sudden you see him taking on a Suggs and you say, oh, okay, well, this is Ben's here. It's go time. So I think it's a good thing. And you look at the rest of the list, I'm surprised Drew Brees is 4. I love Drew Brees. I think at one time, 6 years ago, you could argue him 1. But I think at this point in his career, he turns the ball over too much. Tony Romo, you know, he's a media darling. He's okay. He kind of reminds me of a Brett Favre, but kind of a poor man's Brett Favre. Andrew Luck, you know, he turns the ball over a lot, but you can't argue with the pace he's going at. I mean, this is going to be his 4th season, and Russell Wilson just has that will to win. I've never been a huge fan of Russell Wilson, but he showed me something near the end of that Packer game, his will to win. I don't know if there's any thoughts that you have about the rest of the top 10 quarterbacks on this list.
I was surprised about Brees as well. I am actually a Russell Wilson fan, although this past year he had some, you know, when he wasn't on, boy, was he off. So I think consistency is something that held him back. You know, you really can't argue, you know, as much as, you know, how I feel about Deflategate. But, you know, Tom Brady is an incredibly talented quarterback, and he obviously is a Super Bowl champion. So I don't disagree too much with the list. I am not a fan of Romo, but really looking past Aaron Rodgers, Ben Roethlisberger, Tom Brady, you know, your big names. Yeah, there weren't a whole lot of sleepers among the quarterbacks this year. There weren't any, and I can't off the top of my head think of somebody that just really sort of came out and just stunned everybody with amazing play. So, I mean, you got some familiar names on the list, and I think, you know, we can debate about the order, but it's kind of just the old guard on there at this point. And I really don't think based on, you know, Jameis Winston and Mariota, I don't know that they're going to be big difference makers kind of storming the NFL this year. So I think we'll be seeing this group of guys for, you know, years to come.
Right, I totally agree. And I think, you know, we could talk about Mariota and Winston and those guys, you know, for another half an hour. But I wanted to get to our last topic of the show. We've got 5 minutes. There's a lot of anniversaries on the Steelers, you know, in regards to the Steelers this year. The 75 Steelers celebrate their 40th anniversary. The 95 Steelers celebrate their 20th anniversary of winning the AFC title. Well, that's the team that we'll spend, you know, the rest of our show talking about. The 95 Steelers, you know, that's kind of my first taste of the greatest of this franchise. You know, I grew up on the you know, instead of, you know, story tales and all that stuff, fairy tales, I grew up on nighttime stories of Franco and Terry Bradshaw and Joe Green and all those guys. So I always remember the 95 Steelers as my first Steeler team that I could just kind of put on the mantle and say, okay, you know, this was my great Steeler team. And they fell short in Super Bowl 30, but they finished the job games of the Super Bowl. They were nicknamed Blitzburg the year before because a defensive coordinator named Dick LeBeau came to town, and he unleashed a nasty defense with Greg Lloyd and Kevin Green, and those guys got after people. I mean, it was violent. It was physical, and I'll be honest, seeing Greg Lloyd highlight films back then, it was downright scary. I would have been a scared individual if I was going to play against him. And, you know, we fell 3 yards short of the Super Bowl the year before. We lost to San Diego. They actually shocked us. One of the most upsetting moments in probably any Steeler fan that remembers that game. You know, it was a dark time to be a Steeler fan, you know, for those few months. And then the next year we kind of started off pretty stagnant. We lost Neil O'Donnell to an injury early on. We had to rely on Mike Tomczak for a little bit. We also lost Ron Woodson in the very first week of the year. He tore his ACL and MCL trying to tackle Barry Sanders. His foot got planted in the River Stadium turf. And, I mean, it was a classic Barry Sanders cutback. And, you know, that cutback literally ended the season of Rod Woodson. He would play in the Super Bowl, though. He would be the first player to ever play in a season after suffering an ACL-MCL injury in that same year, which is kind of a cool stat there. And it kind of shows you the dedication of the Hall of Famer that Rod Woodson was. But the Steelers were 3-4 to start the season. They won 8 out of their last 9 to finish 11-5. There's the emergence of the defense, obviously. Neil Don, when he came back, Yancey Sigpen had an amazing season, 1,300 yards receiving. The Steelers employed a 5-wide offense, which, you know, is kind of commonplace now, but it wasn't back then. And then you have the crazy Cordell Stewart, who was nicknamed Flash. We drafted him out of Colorado in the second round. He kind of fell to us, and it was kind of just like a, you know, we were kind of going just by best available at that time in the draft. So Tom Donahoe got him, our old GM, Ron Earhart, the late Ron Earhart, our offensive coordinator at the time, found a place for him. It was the Browns on Monday Night Football. We threw him in as a quarterback option. He threw a touchdown pass, and from that point on, he caught touchdowns, he ran for touchdowns, he threw touchdowns, and he was really a spark that helped us get to that Super Bowl. And we beat the Colts in that classic AFC Championship game that came down to John Jim Harbaugh throwing the Hail Mary pass in the last play that barely fell incomplete. And it was a gamely effort against the Dallas Cowboys, but we fell short by 10 points. But it was Super Bowl where, if you watch the second half, jitters got us in the first half. We started off way too jittery, and Neil O'Donnell fumbled a shotgun snap. It was a bad snap by the center. We just weren't in sync. But that second half, we absolutely manhandled Dallas. And, it's still painful to think about, you know, but it was a valiant effort. And I think that's what I always remember about the 95 Steelers, was that they played with the heart of a champion and they really just they were a fierce team, and their motto that year was 60 minute men, and they really were. I mean, they brought it for 60 minutes, win, lose, or draw. But you heard me blabber on a lot about the 95 Steelers, Danny. What are some of your moments and memories of that team?
Well, I mean, I think you kind of summed it up just in terms of their heart and their drive to win and their perseverance working through the season. And, you know, that's one of the great things about the Steelers. You know, we just have a long history of there are a lot of excellent teams. And, you know, there's been some downturns as well that we can always bounce back from. But certainly the 95 Steelers were, you know, one of the highlights of, you know, the past, I guess that's been 2 decades at this point.
Isn't that crazy? It doesn't seem like it was that long ago, but it was 20 years ago where Bill Cowher was there. And, you know, I always say if we win that Super Bowl, if we find a way to win that Super Bowl, Bill Cowher's a Hall of Famer. I really believe that. Because, really, I mean, we were double-digit underdogs in that game, which we shouldn't have been. I mean, when you look at the talent that we had at that time, when you look at the talent that Dallas had, we were right there with them. I mean, we were, you could argue, the better team. I mean, especially defensively. We had Emmitt Smith at 49 yards rushing, and Dallas had yards rushing and all in that game. So I guess that's our closing thought, is that if we win that Super Bowl against Dallas, do you think Bill Cowher is a Hall of Fame coach?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There's no question about that.
Yeah, I would agree. But and, you know, I know a lot of Steelers fans don't like to talk about Super Bowl 30, but in all honesty, that's one of my prouder moments being a Steelers fan, because we didn't win, but the effort we played in that game, Ron Woodson starting that game and shutting down Michael Irvin in that game, holding 76 yards receiving, and the way that we ran the ball at will in the second half, the way that Ernie Mills and Andre Hastings were just going crazy trying to catch O'Donnell's erratic throws. We were one quarterback short, and that's kind of my closing thought about Big Ben, kind of to pull everything full circle, you know. He doesn't always get his due credit. He always isn't the most glamorous quarterback, but he's one of those special guys that when you have him under center, as long as you have some of the other pieces there and the nucleus there, you're going to have a shot to win a Super Bowl. And that's why the Steelers with Big Ben, you can never count them out. And, you know, unfortunately for the 95 Steelers, we didn't have Ben Roethlisberger, but that didn't mean that they didn't have a great season in their own right. But that's going to wrap up the show. What's Hot Week 3? Again, if you weren't able to catch the show live, we encourage you to go on to iTunes and just click behind the steel, or I'm sorry, the standard is a standard. Click on podcast and you'll see our show called What's Hot. And once again, I really want to thank Danny Bostic for joining the show. Danny, do you have any closing thoughts or words to the viewers out there?
Yeah, I'm just thrilled to be part of the program today, and you know, just very happy to be invited to be on. So thanks a lot, Brian.
Yeah, and hopefully it won't be the last time that you join us on the show. So once again, for Danny Bostic, this has been Brian Giardo. Thanks again for listening, and so long. And as always, it's a great day to be a Steelers fan.